It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it's 36 degrees under a fog mist. Out at the airport, they are clocking wind speeds from the northwest, steady at 14, gusting to 23. They're calling for just a chance of rain and snow until 3 p.m. today, then a slight chance of snow after 3. Mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a high near 37. Northwest wind to 20, gusting to 25. Mostly clear tonight with a low of 28. Northwest winds to 15, turning to the west tonight after midnight. And for tomorrow, snow is likely before noon, then rain and snow between noon and 3, then just rain after 3 p.m. tomorrow. High near 38 with west winds turning to the east and coming up to 25 tomorrow morning. Could gust as high as 30 tomorrow morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak saw record-breaking precipitation for one day. Kodiak's pollock fishery will be opening tomorrow, but don't expect them to leave right away. And an attorney challenging Alaska's new law says it will bring chaos.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Senate Democrats still don't have the votes to overcome a GOP filibuster and pass federal voting rights legislation, but led by Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, they are forging ahead anyway.
Isn't protecting voting rights and preventing their diminution more important than a rule in the Senate, which has not always been in existence and was not envisioned by the founders?
Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, meanwhile, remains undeterred in his opposition.
This party line push has never been about securing citizens' rights. It's about expanding politicians' power. That's why their bill tries to weaken voter ID laws that are popular with Americans of all races.
Civil rights leaders have been fighting for federal protections to counter the push for voting restrictions in GOP-led states that has ramped up after former President Donald Trump's 2020 election defeat. Well, for the first time, the House committee investigating last year's pro-Trump insurrection at the Capitol is requesting records from the former president's relatives. They're asking for communication records from Eric Trump and Donald Trump Jr.'s fiancée, Kimberly Guilfoyle. Secretary of State Antony Blinken warns that Russia could attack Ukraine on short notice. He's in Kyiv to show solidarity and help the country prepare for the worst. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
Secretary Blinken says the U.S. and its partners will give more military aid to Ukraine and impose tough sanctions on Russia.
If it rejects the diplomatic path that we've laid out and proceeds with an unwarranted, unprovoked, unacceptable invasion or destabilization of Ukraine.
Russia says it wants a written response to its demands about the post-Cold War European security architecture. It wants NATO to guarantee that Ukraine will never become a member. Blinken calls that a non-starter. He's set to meet his Russian counterpart in Geneva on Friday. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Kyiv.
Starbucks is telling employees they no longer have to be vaccinated or tested for coronavirus. The announcement comes just days after the U.S. Supreme Court blocked the Biden administration's vaccine or test rule for private sector workers. Here's NPR's Andrea Hsu.
Early this month, Starbucks had told its employees to prepare to comply with the federal government's requirement that most workers be vaccinated against COVID or tested weekly. This week, they told employees that requirement is off now that the Supreme Court has ruled. But the coffee company is still strongly encouraging vaccinations and boosters, and it's requiring workers to wear, at a minimum, a surgical mask on the job. Meanwhile, other companies are sticking with their vaccine rules. The clothing maker Carhartt says the Supreme Court decision does not change their vaccine mandate. Its CEO told employees an unvaccinated workforce is both a people and a business risk that our company is unwilling to take. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Kodiak saw record-breaking precipitation last Thursday when 1.61 inches of rain and snow fell. Although, according to meteorologists with the National Weather Service in Anchorage, it was record-breaking just for that specific date. The last time, January 13th, saw almost that much precipitation, it was a combination of sleet and rain in 1992. Despite the record, meteorologists say it was not an extraordinary precipitation event. More rain and snow is in the forecast for the rest of the week. Kodiak's pollock fishery opens to trawlers tomorrow. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth has this look at the season ahead.
Pollock is the white, flaky fish, frequently used for fish sticks and filet-o-fish sandwiches. And as fisheries go, it's a big deal. Julie Bonney is the executive director of the Ground Fish Data Bank.
In terms of Kodiak, it's the largest fishery in terms of volume. Between the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska is the largest food fishery in the world and the largest fishery in the United States.
There's 129,000 metric tons of pollock allowed for this year's catch. That's 26% more than last year, although Kodiak's fleet won't be heading out until February 4th. Bonney says that's to limit bycatch, which is the incidental catch of non-target species like salmon, and hold out for better fishing conditions, and another reason.
Obviously, COVID is always in the back of everyone's mind, so we try to develop self-management measures so that we can address COVID outbreaks both on the vessels and in the processing plants.
COVID-19 outbreaks shut down two processing plants in Dutch Harbor and another in Accutan last season. Kodiak processors didn't experience any pandemic-related issues. About 45 vessels from Kodiak trawl for pollock annually. This is the first of two seasons for this year's fishery. It closes at the end of May if the quota isn't hit before then. The next season starts in September. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
An attorney challenging Alaska's ranked choice voting system told the state Supreme Court yesterday afternoon the new system, particularly the open primary, weakens political parties and will lead to chaos. Lawyers defending the measure say it gives voters what they want. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Among the big transformations ballot measure 2 makes is that all candidates will appear on the same primary ballot, regardless of party, and the top four will advance to the general election. A candidate can put any party affiliation they like next to their name, or none. That, says former Republican Party attorney Ken Jacobus, is unfair to parties.
Parties and voters have to accept self-designated candidates that they may not want or that they may even disagree with, but are now not allowed to identify the candidates that they actually support or endorse. You know, chaos will be created by that system.
Jacobus also claims, citing another vote 18 years ago, that Alaskans only adopted ballot measure 2 because it also requires more disclosure of political contributions, and getting rid of dark money is broadly popular. He represents the Alaskan Independence Party and Scott Kohlhaas and Robert Byrd, two men who have run for office as minor party candidates. Assistant Attorney General Laura Fox defended the new system on behalf of the Division of Elections. She says parties will no longer be able to hold a state-sponsored primary to select their candidates, but Fox says they are still free to hold their own selection process and designate their favorites.
They can convey their support for whatever candidates they want in whatever manner they want. They can campaign for and against candidates as they please.
During the court session, the lawyers and the justices spent very little time discussing the most prominent feature of ballot measure 2, the ranked choice voting that will take place in the general election this November, assuming the Supreme Court doesn't overturn it. It's been likened to an instant runoff. Voters will get to rank the candidates 1 through 4. If no candidate wins a majority in the first round, the fourth place finisher is eliminated and those ballots are reassigned according to the voters' second choices. Another round may also occur. The state of Maine has adopted ranked choice voting, so have major cities, including New York. Scott Kendall, who helped write Ballot Measure 2 and defended it to the Supreme Court, insists it's not that confusing. Essentially, he says, voters just ask themselves, if my favorite candidate loses, which of the remaining three do I want to support? Chief Justice Daniel Winfrey didn't say when the court would rule, but he acknowledged the state needs to know soon because it's got an election to run. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Yesterday was the first day of Alaska's legislative session, which began with lawmakers saying they wanted to work together. Last year's session was marked by disagreements that nearly led to a partial state government shutdown, as well as differences over COVID-19 safety rules. House Speaker Louise Stutes says she wants members to be respectful. She is a Kodiak Republican leading a mostly Democratic caucus.
Decorum will be returned to this House. We can disagree without being disagreeable, and I expect you all to treat one another with the respect and civility that we all deserve.
House Majority Leader Chris Tuck, an Anchorage Democrat, says his caucus will focus on improving job and educational opportunities. House Republican Minority Leader Kathy Tilton of Wasilla says passing a stable, long-term plan for the state budget is the greatest issue facing the legislature. That's a goal that eluded lawmakers last year, even after several special sessions.
That was the mission of the caucus last session and will continue to be on the top of everybody's minds.
On the other chamber of the legislature, Anchorage Democratic Senator L.V. Gray Jackson drew inspiration from the life of Martin Luther King Jr.
Let us continue to walk in the footsteps of a king. Never stop fighting for the right to live with honor and dignity. Let us continue to dismantle hate by seeking to understand the things that we don't understand and to continue to let our differences strengthen the nation.
Work will begin on the state budget in the finance committees later this week. An investigation into the Ute commuter service plane that caught fire in Bethel in November has found that the fire was started by wiring in the aircraft that was installed incorrectly. The wiring was installed as part of a federally funded experimental safety program. KYUK's Greg Kim reports that over 200 other planes in the region could have the same problem.
The plane that caught fire was a Cessna 207. A week after the incident, two investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board and one from the airplane's manufacturer arrived in Bethel to find out what started the fire. The investigators, including NTSB Alaska Chief Clint Johnson, started collecting the charred remains of the plane.
We were able to harvest some parts that we suspect were the ignition source of the fire.
They sent those parts to Washington, D.C. for forensic analysis. And what they found led them to suspect the fire started with some wires that had been added to the plane around 20 years ago.
And unfortunately, that wire bundle was routed over the top of the aluminum fuel line. And over that time, over the years, that finally chafed through, and we were able to determine that that was, in fact, the initiation point.
These wires were not installed by the airplane manufacturer Cessna, nor were they installed by Ute Commuter Service. They were installed as part of the Capstone Project, a project sponsored by the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, in the late 90s to 2000s. The Capstone Project installed new experimental surveillance systems in aircrafts, and the YK Delta was its first testing ground. The Capstone Project had identified the region as one that is highly dependent on air travel, with difficult flying conditions that the experimental surveillance equipment could help with. The FAA states that over 200 airplanes in the YK Delta were part of the Capstone Project that could be affected by faulty wire installation. In December, the agency sent a letter to all the airlines that it believes could own these planes. In that letter, the FAA tells aircraft owners to inspect the wiring underneath the plane's floorboards to see if they touch the fuel line. It suggests to complete this inspection, quote, at the next maintenance function, 100-hour or annual. Asked why the FAA is not treating these potential flight hazards with more urgency, a spokesperson for the administration wrote in an email that catching the issue within 100 hours would be a pretty quick turnaround. Ute Commuter Service Director of Operations Terry Craddy says his airline has already taken all the steps necessary to keep its passengers safe.
Once we were made aware of what it was, we inspected every one of our aircraft and we grounded them until we did. And we completed an inspection, and the ones that were affected by it, we took corrective action and then returned the aircraft to service.
Crotty says Ute operates 12 aircrafts, 9 of which are Cessna 207s. He said 5 of those had the same faulty wiring installation that caused the fire in November. And he says all of those are now fixed. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
Snowplows in Juneau have had a busy year, and they've struggled to keep up with keeping the roads and sidewalks clear with limited resources. After a recent snow dump, it rained for days and covered many sidewalks with ice. As KTOO's Lindsay Brolini reports, some people who experience mobility issues have had a hard time getting around because of it.
Patrick Carney lives in the Flats neighborhood in downtown Juneau, and he walks or takes the bus to get around. Carney is disabled and has mobility issues because of arthritis. He doesn't need a wheelchair or a walker, but still has a hard time getting around. He gets services from an organization that helps seniors and people with disabilities live with as much independence as they want. This is important to Carney. He likes to get around by himself whenever possible.
I'm trying to be independent as I can. I don't want to become totally dependent on somebody, some agency to take care of me right now.
But lately, it's been a challenge. He can walk through light snow, but sometimes there is no sidewalk to walk on. Or if there is a sidewalk, it might be covered in ice.
The snowplow guys come in through with their big snowplow trucks and just, they clean the street off, but they pile it right up in on the sidewalk and bury cars and bus shelters. And how does that help me? So the streets are clean. So I'll walk to the street. Okay. And walk against traffic.
Keeping sidewalks clear is part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which means it's federal law. But implementing it is tricky, in part because no one organization is responsible for clearing sidewalks. So the state plows Juneau's highways out the road and some other high-traffic roads. The city plows mostly neighborhoods. Whoever is responsible for the road is also responsible for plowing the sidewalks. Then business and property owners are responsible for clearing snow from sidewalks in front of their property. And then Capital Transit, that's a city department, is responsible for keeping bus stops clear. The city's engineering and public works director, Katie Kester, says,
We work hard to keep those bus stops clear. It's not always clear to the sidewalk to get to the bus.
Last year, the city got new equipment to clear bus stops. But if there's no space to put the snow nearby, it gets piled on the side of the road or sidewalk nearby until the snow can be hauled away. Kester suggests that people who struggle with mobility use Capital Access if they are eligible for it. It's a program that provides transportation for people with a disability who can't make it to a bus stop. She also suggests people wear ice cleats when walking around. Kester says plowing the roads is a priority so emergency vehicles can get around. And the city doesn't currently have a budget to plow and remove snow at the same time. So to clear the roads, the snow is sometimes piled onto the sidewalks. And that means it's sometimes plowed into people's driveways, too. The berms at the end of driveways are a byproduct of clearing the streets that the homeowners are responsible for clearing. Those snow berms are frustrating enough to homeowners in the Mendenhall Valley that one even started an online petition to stop the city from blocking private driveways. So far, nearly 440 people have signed it. This has been a struggle for the McCabe family for years. Joe and Ildiko McCabe have a daughter, Kira Nyland, who uses a wheelchair, and so they need their driveway to be wheelchair accessible. Joe McCabe says,
our handicapped daughter needs 24/7 care. So we have health care providers for 12 hours a day, and they have to get in and out of the driveway, as well as Kira has to get in and out of the driveway.
Joe McCabe shovels the driveway for Nyland, but often has to do it multiple times because plows create berms in front of the driveway while plowing through the neighborhood. The school bus comes to pick Nyland up at the end of the driveway. Her mother, Ildiko McCabe, says,
if there's a berm right there, they cannot lower the ramp as well. And last year, this school bus driver actually said that even what we shoveled, it wasn't good enough. Like, they need completely no snow. Everything is gone for them to safely transport the student.
So what that means for the family is that in order for Kira to ride the bus, someone has to stay home and shovel the berm first thing in the morning, and then again before the bus comes back to bring her home. Ilda Koh-McCabe says she's tried all sorts of avenues to fix the problem. Most people tell her to hire a plow truck driver, but she says she has yet to find one who will just hang out and wait to clear the berm in front of her driveway. She called the city's Public Works Department and assembly members and asked if the end of her driveway could be designated a handicap zone, which she says she was told it wasn't possible. She appreciates the work the city plows are doing and sees that the plows are understaffed and working overtime.
But appreciating something and admitting that it's still a problem that has no solution should exist together.
After 10 years of struggling with this issue, Ilda Koh-McCabe doesn't know how else she can make it easier. She wishes there was some sort of process to indicate to the city that they need to have their driveway handicap accessible. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. Pop superstar Lionel Richie is one of the most successful recording artists of all time. His latest album, Tuskegee, is a new take on some of his classic songs, recorded with some of the biggest stars in country music.
Now I'm at almost the end of the album. I realize now that the Parrotheads. Now, what do you do with the Parrotheads? Because I know, so I just asked the question. All night long, he says, absolutely, Lionel. I'm right there. I mean, you know, I love how Jimmy talks. It's just like, every day is all right. You know, every day can't be better, you know. And I said, well, but the only thing I want you to do, Jimmy, is can I get your band to play it? Oh, absolutely, Lionel. We'll play it to death. So when you hear the steel drums, well, that's his sound anyway. I mean, come on. And of course, Jimmy came in, and you could just tell that he took this like no big deal, because the first thing he took off was his sandals. And he walked around the studio with his bare feet, and his band just came in, laid back. And I kept thinking, are we recording this album, or is this just a play period? But it was just perfect. Our voices matched perfectly. I look forward to now, as I told Jimmy, now I'll have a reason to show up at the shows now and just walk on stage. We'll have our song to sing together.
That's Lionel Richie on his newest album, Tuskegee. There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 19th day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:35 and it will set again at 5:06. That will give us 7 hours and 31 minutes, a gain of 3 minutes and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 46 degrees. That was set in 1962. And our record low was -1, set in 1947. Currently 37 degrees. We have hit our predicted high. Wind speeds from the west at 15 out at the airport right now. They are calling for rain and snow today. Just a slight chance of snow after 4 p.m., though. Little or no snow accumulation is expected today. North winds to 20. For tonight, 20% chance of snow before 7 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies will gradually become mostly clear, with a low around 28 overnight. Northwest wind to 15, becoming west 10 after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 20. And for tomorrow, snow is likely before 1, then rain and snow between 1 and 4, then rain after 4 p.m. High near 38 tomorrow, west winds to 10. Should turn to the east and come up to 25 tomorrow afternoon, could gust as high as 30. And we're looking at maybe a half inch of new snow accumulation tomorrow. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:27 this afternoon. That will be a 9.5-foot tide. It'll be followed by a low tide at 9:13 p.m., a minus 9/10 of a foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:46 a.m. and be 7.4 feet, and our morning low tide for here on the east side will be at 9:02 a.m. and be 2.6 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 3 p.m. That will be a 14.6 foot tide. Your next low tide will be at 9:45 p.m. and be minus 1.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 4:04 a.m. at 12.9 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be 9:48 a.m. and 3.7 foot tide in Larsen Bay. Mariners, we do have a gale warning for Thursday for both sides of the island. Northeast 30 today for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. We'll turn to the northwest late tonight, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, east 25 will increase to 35 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 12 feet on our east side tomorrow. And for tomorrow night, southeast 30, seas coming up to 14 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for Thursday as well. North 30 today, becoming west 20 at the south end of the strait this afternoon, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 20 will increase to 35 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas building to 10 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. And for Thursday night in the Shelikof, northeast 35, seas remaining at 12 feet. I have in my hand a list of Kodiak Island Borough meetings. Tonight, the Planning and Zoning regular meeting will be occurring virtually. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. All meetings for the foreseeable future are virtual. To tune into them, you want to go to the Kodiak Island Borough website. That is at www.kodiakak.us. Tomorrow, the Assembly is having a regular meeting. That's also happening at 6:30 p.m. and will be virtual. For Monday, Consolidation Committee meeting, also at 6:30 p.m., also virtual. And on Wednesday, the ever-excited Solid Waste Advisory Board regular meeting will happen. At 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, all meetings will be virtual. The Coast Guard Marine Safety Detachment in Kodiak is reminding mariners to check the date on your commercial fishing vessel safety decal in your window. If it is expiring soon or has expired, stop by their office downtown and pick up a checklist to prepare for your dockside exam. A safety exam is required for all commercial fishing vessels that operate more than 3 miles from shore, and that includes transiting to the fishing area. Contact them at 907-486-5918 or stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have any questions. It's time to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation 2022 Individual Artist Award. There are competitive grants for Alaska artists, including 25 project awards at $7,500 each and 10 fellowships at $18,000 each. They're for emerging, mid-career, and mature artists. The deadline is Tuesday, March 1st for online applications. Paper applications must be delivered or postmarked by February 14th. And they're having a workshop tonight. That's happening at 5:30 to 7 p.m. through the Kodiak Arts Council. To register for the workshop, go to rasmussen.org, their website, and that's R-A-S-M-U-S-O-N, and scroll down to the workshop registration links. Kodiak History Museum, Kodiak Arts Council, and the City of Kodiak is inviting artists to submit qualifications to design an outdoor public art installation in downtown Kodiak as part of the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative. The artwork will be located in an area near the ferry terminal parking lot, including nearby crosswalks and sidewalks. It will connect the terminal and visitor center with the museum district. The primary goal is to revitalize an underutilized public space, creating a pedestrian plaza for visitors and locals alike. The artist submission deadline is coming up. It's January 21st, and today is the 19th. Complete details and artist submissions process can be found online at the Kodiak Arts Council website. That's www.kodiakarts.org. Just a reminder, the Kodiak Public Library is closed to the public through January 31st due to staff shortages and active COVID-19 cases. Curbside delivery and home delivery are available. You need to call them between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. Their number is 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.